As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is your fire.
With the power of Grayskull.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
And welcome back to the Pizzcast. We've had a bit of a two-month sabbatical, you know. Life goes on, life changes. We had our last Oscar show, or the post-Oscar show, and now we're getting back into the groove. Who knows when the next time the Pizzcast will come? It's the summer month, we're catching up with movies. It's always a surprise. That's a part of the fun about the Pizzcast. It may not be here today or tomorrow, but it's going to be here eventually. I'm, of course, Nick. With me is DJ.
Hello.
And we're here again to talk movies, specifically summer movies. We were 3 weeks into, or I guess a month and a half, if you count John Carter movies. As the first movie of the summer, which they were. We're about a month and a half into summer movie season, and the good ones are coming up. We've jumped past John Carter, and we've jumped past. Was that winter?
I think that was March. To get out.
And it's already on DVD.
Yep. I haven't seen it yet. It's my next one on Netflix.
Although I've heard it's actually making money overseas.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think the major issue with that one was the way it was marketed.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, it's actually a pretty decent movie.
Well, I think, from what I've read too, I think we probably read the same stuff, I can't remember the director's name right now. Andrew Stanton.
Pixar.
Thought cameos.
Yeah.
Which we're all a little sad about on the inside. So let's talk about movies we were excited to see when we have seen. First off, the summer, I think for me, and I hate to sound cliche, the summer kicked off with the Avengers. I think the Avengers was the, you know, they've been so much build up. And I think you've said this before in the podcast that until you saw the Avengers movie, you weren't going to believe there was an Avengers movie.
I think my exact quote was, until I saw the first footage, I refused to believe that any Avengers movie was ever getting made. And honestly, when I saw the first trailer, I wanted to be excited, but I was a little hesitant as to what I was seeing.
The first trailer didn't show a heck of a lot.
No, it didn't. And I tried to keep my expectations, not low, but reserved.
Yeah.
And by the time it came to 2 weeks before the movie, I could not wait to see it. It was,
yeah.
I mean, I really could not wait to see it. And I walked out of it thinking it's quite possibly the greatest comic book movie I've ever seen. And I've been saying this to everyone when I say that, I don't count The Dark Knight as a comic book movie, strictly. But in terms of just comic book movies.
As far as comic book action goes.
Because I can, every shot of the Avengers, I can picture as a Marvel comic.
I agree. 100%.
From Eric Bana and Chris Evans.
I told Angela that.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, the two of them standing on the side of the helicarrier as it transforms and starts to fly. That I could just see in an Avengers comic book. And it just brought
spoiler
me back
alert,
to,
by the way.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot.
There's going to be a lot of spoilers in this.
So, yeah, but if you're one of like the four people who haven't seen Avengers by now,
yeah, seriously, it's made
the third highest grossing movie of all time.
It's made $400 million in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
What I loved about the Avengers was when you put it in the scope of what they had been building up for. Let me just pause this for a second. Sorry. So, you know, what I liked so much about the Avengers was that, like you said, every shot was a comic book shot. Like, Joss Whedon has an amazing mind. In general, when it comes to action and story and creating like this land of make-believe, which again is incredibly cliched, and I apologize. But he's also a comic book fan.
Yeah.
Like even to go into the entire process of the last, you know, the hype that's been Joss Whedon's going to write and direct the Avengers. It's been like, well, I'm going to take aspects from Avengers 182,
right,
which I read in 1963.
Yeah.
You know, it's like stuff like that, which as a geek, I really appreciate. And I mean, I trust Whedon because I love his work, because I've never been as disappointed by a Joss Whedon product. But I also trust him also that he knows his shit when it comes to putting together a comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you have this insane amount of pressure because you are merging four characters into one movie, even though it's been planned, but I mean, there was never a story to go along. Like, there was never a, you know, there was never the archetype of we're going to have this imaginary enemy that
right.
no one's ever heard of before. Like, everyone was expecting the enemy in this to be someone the Avengers face, whether it be, you know, Namor or, you know, the Skrulls or someone. Mm-hmm. No one knew what to expect when it came to the villain in this movie.
Right.
And I think he pulled that off really well, keeping everyone in suspense and really not letting anyone know and not being disappointed by it, that the only villain that you're going to know in this movie is Loki. And that is only if you had seen
Thor
and the last 15 minutes of Captain America.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. You're putting together movies that have all of the films have totally different stories and backgrounds and tones and themes and directors and writers, you know, between Jon Favreau and, you know, Kenneth Branagh, of all people, mm-hmm. and whoever did Captain America.
Joe Johnson.
And the two other unsuccessful Hulk movies with two different actors.
Yeah.
With two different stories. With two different origins.
Yep.
You know, and you can put them all into one movie that successively shows who the Avengers are, for the most part what their origins are, and the dynamic that's always existed there between the characters.
Yeah.
Of they're doing what's right, but they don't necessarily like each other.
Right. And I think Whedon, one of the best parts of the Avengers where I think Whedon proved himself beyond anything else was the way he brought and used the Hulk. I mean, he accomplished something that they couldn't do through two Hulk movies, and he did it by using Hulk as a supporting character.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, I think we found that Hulk works better
as a
supporting character and not the focus of his own story.
And this is someone who actually, there was a year and a half period where I enjoyed the first Hulk because I respected what Ang Lee tried to do of making a human story into an action film. And then I turned the corner and said, fucking Hulk dogs, really? And then I really liked the Ed Norton one.
Yeah.
And mainly, maybe it's because of my love of Ed Norton and Tim Roth. And I like what they were trying to do with Tim Roth bringing in the Abomination and then Tim Blake Nelson.
Yep.
I'm actually getting names right in this podcast, which is amazing. As the mastermind, genius?
Leader.
As the leader.
Yeah.
I thought it was really clever of how they were doing that. But, you know, no one wanted to see a Hulk movie.
Yeah.
As we proved 8 years before when no one wanted to see the first Hulk movie.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. Making the Hulk a supporting character was imperative to this movie to work. And like we said, Whedon's not dumb. Like, he probably knew going into it that, you know, he's looking at the entire scope in front of him. And Captain America did a ton of money. Thor did really well. I mean, it probably exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
But the thing with Thor was the fact that it was a superhero movie with a huge feminist undertone. And it was basically, you know, you're watching a classical story unfold in a comic book without either genre suffering.
Yeah.
Whether it be Norse theology or comic book fans. And then you have Iron Man, which is just a super smash that evidently Iron Man, my dad actually saw the Avengers a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I'll be honest, I didn't really know what was going on as far as the backstory goes, but I love Iron Man.
Yeah.
I want to be Iron Man. My father, who hates, I mean, he likes action movies, but he hates comic book movies. He goes, I actually really enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed Iron Man a lot.
Well, there you go.
And then, spoiler alert, if you're going into the end of it, I think the action sequences in it were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't one of those things, like, one of my biggest problems with all the Transformers movies, where the action sequences are so, they're dark, they're far away, they're so convoluted, you can't tell what's happening. I had no problem following any of the sequences in the Avengers.
Nope.
From Hulk smash to phasers and whatnot.
Yeah, and that final 45 minutes was just nonstop action, and it worked really well in giving each character their own moment.
Yeah.
Or moments. And not only that, but showing the characters working together. Even if it was just a quick shot of Iron Man bouncing the repulsor ray off of Cap's shield, or Cap helping Black Widow jump onto one of the ships. It was a lot of them finally working and functioning as a team,
right,
while giving each actor and character moments to shine. And yeah, I thought it worked really well, balancing the four main heroes and plus Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yeah, and, who are lesser heroes, but still right, equally but still popular.
Part of that team. And I was shocked at how well it worked. I mean, happily shocked that
yeah,
it worked so well.
And it was seamless.
Yeah, and I've seen it three yeah, times now, and I haven't been bored at all. There's not one scene in that movie where I'm like, okay, get to the good stuff. Like,
you know, I don't think I would be bored either, because from the very beginning, you start off with action.
Yeah.
And so many times, you start a movie off with action, like, as much as I love Die Hard with a Vengeance, it starts with a huge explosion, and all they try to do now is just blow stuff up bigger and bigger and bigger throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the movie on a diehard level. But it's not, I wouldn't say it was a classic film.
No.
Or even a film that's worth note, other than, like, you see Sam Jackson. It's Sam Jackson, maybe his first big role.
The year after Pulp Fiction.
The year after Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
That's the only notable thing about it.
Yeah.
But this, from the very beginning, it was action, action, action. And there was a perfect amount of lull in between all the sequences. But the characters, the dialogue, the story never suffered.
Now, how did you feel about the jokes? Because I've heard from a lot of people that are, like you and I, huge fans of this, but still, they thought it was a little too heavy on some of the jokes. I personally loved it. I thought it was funny. I thought every joke...
I think you need it. I think on a story, if you read the comic books, it doesn't matter what comic book you read, there's always that tinge of humor in it.
Yeah.
You know, that's half of Spider-Man's shtick, is that, you know, he talks and he just quips, which I think we'll talk about Spider-Man later on, but I think in the previews they capture that really well.
Yeah.
That's all Deadpool is.
Right.
All Deadpool is killing people and cracking jokes about killing people. X-Men, you know, like all comic books have that humor to them. And I think it was captured really well in Iron Man too, the Tony Stark, the cynicism and the sarcasm. And I think, you know, that's something that's great about Whedon's work as a whole. If you look at it, even his most depressing episode of Angel or Buffy or Dollhouse had a funny element to it. There was always a few smartly written jokes weaving into character dialogue that, you know, people under stress crack jokes. That's
right.
Just nature of humanity.
And the jokes worked so well for the different characters.
Yeah.
Whether it was...
It didn't stick out to me that this is inappropriate.
Right. Whether it was Iron Man's ego or Thor's jokes about Loki. I really enjoyed the Captain America ones where it was him. They made a joke about him finally getting a reference because it was a Wizard of Oz reference.
Yeah.
Or when... Not understanding all the techno talk between Banner and Stark, and it was something about, like,
and even the physical humor, even the slapstick humor, like when spoiler alert, when Hulk just smashes Thor
to the side, yeah.
After they just worked with each other to kill like 200 aliens,
yeah,
he just hits them just to get him back for earlier. I think that all worked, and it all, you need that kind of comic relief in that, because otherwise it just lets you down.
Yeah.
Like, you just see everyone fighting and they win, and then you cut to two other people fighting. Like, there's no transition there. There's no reason for you to, like, have an emotional output for all that action that just happened.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that finally sold me on it was the scene in one of the final trailers where it's the shot where it's the 360. It's like the Michael Bay shot around, which I thought worked for this. And what I really liked about the movie, one of the many things I really liked about the movie was that's not necessarily the best hero shot in the movie.
No.
Because I love the shot at the end where Loki opens his eyes and they're all standing around him. I think, like, they're all unmasked if they have masks. And it's like the Avengers finally together as a team. Like,
that to me is the only shot that I thought was a little... A little
the 360 one?
No. When he's opening his eyes. Okay. Just because you're taking that, you're throughout the entire movie, you haven't had that point of view of from someone's eyes.
Yeah,
it's been the God camera. That was the only part that I thought. But
see,
you're right.
I loved it. No, that
but
was you're... the shot for me that was like that's the Avengers. I could see that as like you know that shot I could see from like a 1960s comic book.
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
The Avengers started.
Yeah, absolutely. Which probably was a throwback too.
Right.
I'm sure if you asked Ross, we can go, yeah, that was number 27.
Yeah.
When they beat up Dr. Doom. Word. So, I mean, looking to Avengers sequel, they've already put out a date for 2014?
I think so, yeah. Or no, because that's Captain America 2. So I think 2015's
Avengers. 2015's
Avengers. Thor's next year. Thor 2 is next year. Captain America.
I thought Captain America 2 is next year.
Maybe Captain America 2 is next year.
Or is it X-Men 2? No, X-Men 2 is next
year. X-Men 2 is next year, yeah.
Now we're just going to head ourselves by years and characters. But looking forward to Avengers 2, I mean, if you stuck around for the last scene, opens up a brand new door.
The second to last scene.
The second to last. Wait, there's another last scene?
There's a scene at the very end of the credits.
Oh, see, we... I was dog sick. Like, I was about to pass out. So
there was a scene at the very end of the credits.
So not only is there... Thanos. There's also another one?
Yes, but it's more of a joke scene.
It doesn't have any story.
It's all of them sitting around at the shawarma place, and nobody says a word. It's all of them, and they all look like they just ate their weight in shawarma. And they're just sitting there staring at each other, looking exhausted and full for like a full minute. And then it just cuts to black.
That's great.
And they actually shot it. That's the scene they shot in April when Robert Downey Jr. got himself in trouble with Marvel and was like, we got to go at the press conference after the premiere. He was like, we have to go shoot a scene. And everyone went nuts asking what was going on and Marvel denied it. And then it turns out they were shooting this scene. And all of that goes back to the shawarma line was ad-libbed by Robert Downey Jr. when they were filming. And they just decided it would be a great joke. And
if you watch,
Chris Evans had grown a beard.
Yeah.
And so if you watch the scene, Evans is just sitting there with his hand over his mouth the whole time. I guess they put like a prosthetic to hide the beard, and then he's just sitting there covering his chin the whole time. It's a really funny shot because it's just total silence. I think there's a guy like cleaning the debris from the building being knocked over in the back of the restaurant, and they're just sitting around a table. Like eating. Thor's got like a massive shawarma. I don't know, is that a sandwich or is it just a I don't know.
That's a really funny.
But it was a really funny scene. So,
you know, but if you look forward to that, and even if they put off the Avengers, even if they put off Infinity Gauntlet storyline for another, you know, if by some chance of act of God they can finally get all the Marvel characters together, which I don't think will ever happen.
No.
Sony's never going to give up Spider-Man.
Although, did you hear that they had reached an agreement?
Oh, did they?
They had reached an agreement where in the Avengers, the Oscorp Tower was going to appear in the screen, in the skyline.
Oh, okay.
And that was just going to be a little throw to the fans. And that was it. That was going to be the only crossover. That I don't know if Stark Tower was supposed to show up in Spider-Man, but from what I read, they had reached an agreement. And then it just didn't work with the scheduling as they were shooting Avengers. Because it was shot so far before
Spider-Man.
So... But in terms of character, I don't think we're ever going to see.
No, but even if we don't, and if they introduce, I don't know, say three other Avengers, you know, Vision, which I have a whole theory that I don't want to ruin the entire movie for people. I'll ruin parts of it. We'll talk off the air about Angela had a good, read something very interesting about Vision.
Okay.
A Vision thing. But anywho, next up, we both saw Prometheus.
Yes,
which was the heavily anticipated but very undocumented prequel to Aliens, which everyone knew it was an Aliens prequel because it was everything about Alien, the Alien quadrology, even though that fourth one is terrible. But no one wanted to admit that it actually was Alien until I think Lindelof, like 3 weeks before, and goes, yeah, it's about Alien.
Yeah.
I'm going to start. I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
I thought it was... It wasn't as good as Alien or even Aliens, but...
Definitely not.
What it did and what it was supposed to be, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fact that it kind of... it kept that whole mythology of the story alive. It very successfully, and you really don't see it that often. They did a reboot and an explanation all at the same time.
Yeah.
And so now they can have, you know, X amount of movies with this, with characters from this movie, and keep that going, you know, until they don't want to make movies about it anymore.
Right.
And they did it successfully. Like, I was happy when I left.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it wasn't so much horror as it was an action film. Maybe a little bit suspenseful.
Yeah.
It was written okay. Like, there were some plot holes for me. Like,
yeah, there's definitely
some plot huge
holes,
jumps of logic that if only someone else had said the line instead of one character, I would have been okay with it.
Yeah.
But the special effects were amazing. It was the aesthetic to it was great. There were a lot of parts, you know, despite the fact that they are on this ship. If you look at the first Alien Dead in 78, where it's just big blocks of colored buttons and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
They still kept some of that aesthetic. You know, in the first Alien movie, the rec room is all white, and this one, the rec room was all white and cushioned, which. Even the pods kind of resembled stuff from the first Alien movie.
The cryopods.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, overall, there are some parts that I would take back, but I thought it was successful in doing what it should do.
Yeah, and I meant to rewatch Alien before I went. I didn't get a chance to, so I'm seeing it again this weekend, and I'll rewatch Alien before. But even not having watched Alien, there were a lot of parts that I thought matched up really well in terms of continuing the story, but also in terms of Ridley Scott, I guess, tipping his hat to himself.
Yeah.
As he was the director of the original. But I really like the ending. Noomi Rapace's last line is very similar to Sigourney Weaver's last line in the original Alien, which I like that a lot. Did you notice when... Major spoiler alert here, so stop listening if you haven't seen it yet. But I'll try and get around specifics without giving too much away, but
Then I'll ruin it when I say yes.
Right. The ship at the end, when it's inverted, did you see the shape of the ship?
I had to think about it. Yeah, you told me, okay. And I had to think about it and kind of think about it again. But yes, I did.
It's shaped as the alien when it's in like the birthing stage.
No, but the circular.
Yeah.
But it's all, yeah.
This ship is shaped like an alien would be when it's inside.
Right.
Someone.
So. You know, some of the parts I liked about it was the fact that it's so ambiguous about the origin still. Like, you go into this movie thinking it's going to be an origin movie. And they answer some questions, but it's kind of like Lost. Maybe that's his Lindelof's fingerprint on it, was that it gives you more questions than you do answers about the story. But that didn't bother me.
It didn't bother me as much as the end of Lost bothered me.
which Lindelof still doesn't care about that.
Right.
I thought that the introduction of the alien critters in this new universe, and not telling you everything, not being spoon-fed what's going on.
Right.
Because the characters in the movie are just as skeeved out and have as many questions as you do. And I like how it kind of draws you in that way, for you to draw your own conclusions. That they never tell you what's happening, but you have to, if you're someone like my fiancé, who had never seen any of the Aliens movies, that you could decipher what this species was.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who have seen and love, especially Aliens and Alien 3, what the creatures can become. And the symbiotic nature of it, the parasitical nature of the creature, why it's not exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with all of that.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of what it pointed to, but it didn't come right out and say this is... It didn't even say this is where we're going with it if we do another one. Or, you know, it doesn't match up exactly to Alien, but it plants the seeds of where we'll eventually maybe see the event, how the events of Alien.
And if it wasn't for Madagascar 3,
it would have been number one.
It would have been number one, and they would have signed off a sequel already.
We'll see how it does. As long as it doesn't have a huge drop off this weekend, my guess is we'll probably see a sequel.
Yeah.
Which,
let's talk about some of the acting, because some of the acting, it was a great cast.
Yeah.
You had Guy Pearce, you had Noomi Rapace.
Guy Pearce, again, spoiler alert, as an old man. And
unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Unless you watch the video, the viral videos that came out this week before the TED video.
And they did announce this week that there will be a director's cut with 20 to 30 minutes of footage. So
of young Guy Pearce.
Yeah, probably.
Idris Elba, who for
awesome.
All fans of The Wire is amazing. All friends of Luther is amazing. A guy who kind of looked like Tom Hardy.
Logan Marshall Green, I think is his name. Which I've seen him in other movies and never taken any notice of the guy, but I really liked him in this.
Yeah. I thought, and I told you this after I had saw it, I thought, and of course Michael Fassbender, who in the course of a year, you know, it was almost a year ago that X-Men First Class came out.
Yep.
Then in the course of a year has become maybe one of the, if not the most interesting actor and the one who can portray the best range, probably one of the more popular popular actors within the last year.
Yep.
And showing range and showing dedication to a role and making sure he changes himself each time.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be Magneto or a sex addicted, a sex addict, or in this case, an android who loves Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
Which that doesn't give away anything. That's in all the trailers. I thought Fassbender was amazing in this.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
I thought, you know, for the role that was written, I had problems with how it was written in some cases. Like, for instance, he's an android, and they tell you that he has no soul, but yet he has a sense of irony.
Right.
And he's, cracking jokes. If you take a Data as the android standard from Star Trek The Next Generation. Okay. I want to make sure you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah, no,
if
I am looking at you like that, but that's rather, no, I'm just kidding. Yes, I'm familiar with Data.
If you take the Data archetype, which is, if you have no soul, then you have no, you're always working on it, but you don't have it. But here he masters irony and puns.
Yeah.
I'm punny. But I don't blame Fassbender. He did a great job for what he was given.
Right.
Written.
What the role was,
You know, even for Idris Elba, you know, for what the role was, I thought he did a great job with it.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron's character, I probably would have liked to see more, but she really wasn't written that much. I thought they were going to do a twist. I thought there was something else going on there, but they went the other way with it.
Yeah.
But I did not like Naomi Rapace.
Really?
She's the only character that I liked the way it was written. Because like we talked about, she was very Ripley-esque.
Yeah.
And it was great to see that strong female lead. And it's so hard to be in an Alien movie, which is known for Sigourney Weaver, and known for Ripley being completely badass. In the first one, she didn't know what she was fighting against, but she was badass. In the second one,
super badass.
Super badass. And even the third one and fourth one, continuing to be badass. And it's entire, you are stepping into a role where number one, you don't see a lot of female heroines anyway. A female leads with strong female leads in a horror slash action film. So you're going into this role with a huge shadow. And I thought the way it was written was great. I just thought her performance was not as great.
Okay.
And after watching her in Sherlock Holmes, I'm thinking, I don't understand why people, like, I loved Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the Swedish one. I thought she was great in that.
Yeah.
But the step over to mainline
audiences is
tough.
Hollywood's trying to fit her into movies to try and get to turn her into kind of a crossover actress. And I've liked Noomi in everything I've seen her in. Sherlock Holmes, not as much. I thought that was kind of a, let's just fit her in to fit her in.
I liked her in
Prometheus. I totally see where you're coming from, but I like that it was a throwback to Ripley, but it was also a different type of character. And I thought she held her own I think she has easily the best sequence in the movie.
Yeah.
That involves a surgery pod, and that's, I'll just leave it at that, without giving too much away. But I really liked her a lot, and I'd like to see her in more stuff, but I think they do need to be careful with how they cast her.
Because I think the last 30 minutes of this movie, if that was so Ripley, it sounded like that was so Raven. I don't know why I'm semi-quoting Disney television shows.
Now but I'm looking at you like you're crazy.
I'm making that, now I'm making a jump of logic. I think the last 30 minutes of the movie she was phenomenal in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if they can, if they make a sequel and if they continue to write the way they did for her, and taking like this newfound, a lot of the way Ripley found her courage at the end of the first one and brought it through to the second one where she's holding the fucking space marine gun.
Yeah.
I think she has a lot of, but the potential is definitely there. I just, in the scope of all the great actors that were in this movie, and there were probably three good performances, really good performances. Fassbender being number one, and then levels underneath that. She wasn't terrible. I'm just saying, like, I find it a hard time trying to place her. It was wishy-washy at some point in it. That's all. But I like Prometheus. Like, after listening to me just bitch about story and Fassbender being punny as an android and no, you would think I wouldn't like the movie, but I did.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it all the way through.
I like it in spite of all the flaws and plot holes I saw in it, because I like how many questions it raised and how much it makes you think about larger themes and issues. Yes. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it again, and I hope it's a movie that holds up.
Which is great with, you know, if you look at the Alien, especially Alien, and Aliens, this movie definitely echoed the same themes that you wouldn't think a movie about an alien terrorizing people would bring up.
Yeah.
So we both like Prometheus, and we both liked Avengers. We both love the Avengers.
Yeah.
So right now, we're 2 for 2 right here.
Yep.
And then we're going to go into the summer movies now. In 2 weeks, we have... Yeah, 2 weeks, right? Not this week, it'd be the next week.
Yeah,
so 2 weeks. We have Pixar's newest film, Brave, which I have been eagerly anticipating since I saw the first trailer, which showed you absolutely nothing about the movie, other than the fact that it was Pixar, and it was called Brave.
Yeah, that's all you need for me.
All Pixar, you really need is Pixar.
I'm eagerly anticipating.
Unless it's followed by Pixar Presents Cars 3.
Right.
Which I don't know if I told you, I actually sat down and watched Cars 2 recently. Cars 2 may be the worst out of, and it's so hard because I love Pixar. And I mean, I didn't think I would like Cars, the first Cars, and I actually really appreciated the attention of detail.
Yeah.
Like, I hated the fact that Cars had eyes. But the attention of detail to NASCAR races that they stuck to, I appreciate it on that level. This one, there was nothing closely to redeeming quality.
Yeah, no, it was about it. A movie to sell toys.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Cars 2 was terrible, and I will tell John Lasseter that to his face. Cars 2 was a piece of shit. But with the exception of Cars 2. They've never made a bad movie unless you're Angela and you hate Finding Nemo. Brave looks phenomenal. It's the first story with a female lead, which I think is important for Brave, for Pixar to get upon. It's the first kind of... it's their first attempt at telling a fairy tale, or a modern-day fairy tale, which I think if you're in Disney, you might have that pressure to tell that kind of story. And the voice actors in it, the voices in it are, I mean, as far as the trailer goes.
Yeah.
I have no problem with
that. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. I'm trying to think what else I've seen, or is Men in Black 3 I'll see at some point.
See, I can't bite. That's something I have to wait
for. I shouldn't
for.
Give it a shot after Men in Black 2.
Yeah.
But what's really roping me in is Josh Brolin as a young Tommy Lee Jones.
I've heard that's the best reason awesome to see this movie.
Just in the 2-minute trailer that you see him probably for 2 lines, he's fantastic. So I'll see it eventually. I saw Snow White and the Huntsman. I know you're planning on seeing
that. We're planning on seeing that this weekend. Do you want to talk about everyone's favorite Norse god, and everyone's favorite female turned vampire.
Let's
by
wait
way
till the
Woman
next one once you've seen it, and then we'll backtrack and
we'll
do
backtrack.
Snow White.
Also, so that's June basically. June is. I've noticed I already see Madagascar 3. I don't know about you.
I don't think I ever saw Madagascar 2.
Or 1?
I saw 1. 1's pretty good.
So, Brave, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to pass on that one. They're trying... Late Night Shows are trying to make us all see Seeking a Friend at the End of the World.
Yeah, Comedy Central's really pushing that.
But I am not going to see it.
I might see it.
Really?
Yeah. Steve Carell, Keira Knightley. Why not?
I love how that's like my reason for watching the Office last year. Like, yeah, I know Steve Carell. It's on for so long. I like Dwight.
Well, that's the type of movie that could be just so kind of offbeat it could work. I mean, it's a comedy about the end of the world, starring one of the most mismatched couplings I think I've ever heard of for movies. So
yeah.
It could work. It could be a disaster. So,
we have two movies in front of us now. We have both starting with M. We have Magic Mike, a story which I don't... I'm going to see it.
I'm going to see it, too.
I'm
going to
see it because I love Steven
Soderbergh. Yep. So.
And Angela's going to see it because it's a lot of guys wearing next to nothing, including our favorite from White Collar,
Matthew Bomer.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, like there's so many people who are like just stripping in this movie.
Well,
and the guy from True Blood.
And Matthew McConaughey's in it, and it's...
And Channing Tatum, who's a superstar.
McConaughey's half naked in every movie he's ever been in,
well,
so that's nothing new for
yeah.
him.
And then we also have Madea's Witness Protection, which I don't know how they can make another Madea movie and make a crossover with a wide audience, but somehow they managed to do it by putting in Eugene Levy and Denise Richards, which, let's face it, America can't get enough of Eugene Levy and Denise Richards. Or can they? And I just totally missed the boat on that.
Yeah, I don't...
I appreciate how much work Tyler Perry does with everything that he does. I may not see it, I may not like it, but I appreciate the amount of work that goes into making 12 movies a year.
Well, I'm more interested in seeing how he'll cross over to, like, a more mainstream audience as Alex Cross, taking over...
Ah, let's forget, he is doing Alex
yeah,
Cross.
Yeah, the Morgan Freeman role.
You know who was supposed to do that first? Idris Elba.
Yep.
He had signed on and said, I can't. I got Luther.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? You said you wanted to talk about the first live action film from Seth MacFarlane, Ted.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing it next Tuesday. A slightly advanced screening, I think. I am looking forward to seeing it because I walked through the set a few times in the South End.
Well, hey now, so we'll back
and
off.
Walked past their trailers, and that's really the only reason I'm looking forward to seeing it because
it was shot in Boston.
Yeah, and. The trailer made me laugh. The R-rated trailer made me laugh. It didn't make me laugh as much as I would expect it
yeah.
should have.
Yeah.
Because it looks and sounds like
Family
a
Guy?
Live action episode of Family Guy.
I
with
agree.
Basically Peter Griffin and Brian as a stuffed bear.
And I'm not a huge fan of Family Guy. Like, I might be the only...
I love Family Guy.
Like, I stopped watching after they came back. Like,
okay.
I think the first run they did was really well done, and then... I watched, I think, half that first season.
The original run, like,
yeah.
back in 99 before it disappeared and
correct.
Only was revived because of DVD.
Correct.
Yeah.
The original
loved,
run, I thought, was great.
Yeah, I watched the original run of Family
yeah.
Guy and nobody knew what I was talking about.
Yeah. And the original run, the three seasons?
No, the
two?
Original run was, like, not even a full season.
Really?
Yeah.
But
and
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really
it.
Well done episodes. And then when they came back, like, well, now we're going to just... Now we're just going to be shocking to be shocking.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell out of love with it. You know what? I'll see it because I like Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I want to see Wahlberg in a comedy.
I just see the Giovanni Ribisi's in it, so just for that reason.
Interesting.
I'm in.
That.
But, you know, I think Seth MacFarlane is he's a funny writer.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's going to differentiate this from Family Guy.
Right.
Which, I'm not sure if that curiosity is a good reason enough to see it.
I just don't want to see a whole movie of jokes that should be in a Family Guy episode. I like Seth MacFarlane. I want to see him take a step towards having a movie career. But if a step towards having a movie career is just taking all the same jokes you'd use on your TV show that's not a step in the right direction.
Well, so, you know, he could have been a bigger TV star if they just let Flash Forward have that second season.
Was he on that?
You didn't watch Flash Forward?
I think I watched the first couple episodes.
Yeah, he's one of the FBI guys.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yes.
Was he?
Yes.
Is this going to be one of the things
I'm absolutely right about this.
Do we need to look this up? Because
we even said, why is Seth MacFarlane in a Fast Forward?
I was obsessed with, what was her name? Paula? No. It was something like that.
Is this the
show where everybody, like, fell asleep for 5 minutes?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Joseph Fiennes was in it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. I did see, like, the first two episodes.
Oh, Joseph Fiennes. So as we're looking up that to make sure Nick's not a liar, July 6th...
I wouldn't say a liar.
just have a terrible memory when it comes to who's in movies. July 6th, The Amazing Spider-Man, the anticipated and at the same time questioned reboot of Spider-Man.
Yes, and from the day they announced that, I mean, I remember the news breaking that Tobey Maguire and Sam Raimi went into a meeting at Sony and were told in the meeting that they would not be part of Spider-Man 4. Like, the day it happened, I remember reading that. And then the next day, them saying they were going to reboot the franchise and it'll be coming out in 2012. I thought rebooting a franchise the exact 10th year since the release of the first movie was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Since then, I have extremely high hopes for it, and I think it looks like it has the potential to be better than any of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
I will agree. And I'll stop right there before I say, what turned you around? Was it the casting?
It's the cast.
It's the cast.
And it looks to be the way, a combination of Andrew Garfield as both Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and the way they're writing the character to be the Spider-Man from the comics, which Tobey Maguire got part of it right.
Yeah.
He never blew me away as the character, but he wasn't terrible. But they just left out the entire part of Spider-Man being a wise-ass. And that's the whole point, is when he's in that mask and in that costume and he's the hero, he's the total opposite.
He's an alter ego.
The
total
bookworm,
alter ego. Yeah.
Quiet Peter Parker. And you need that. You need to have that kind of juxtaposition of those two sides of that one character.
As much as I love Spider-Man, I saw all three of them in the theater. And, but I agree with you. Like, Peter Parker never jumped out at me as Spider-Man. The exception of the first scene you see him the next morning after the spider bit bites him. Spoiler alert, in case you haven't seen the 10-year-old movie yet. That first scene where he's all jacked because of the spider strength, that's the only time I go, because I said to myself, okay, I can get kind of behind this.
Yeah, I would say that whole sequence where he first is starting to realize his powers.
I think the fact that, you know, in the first version, they wrote the web into him. They kind of did what they did with Amazing Spider-Man.
Organic web shooters.
Organic web shooters. They kind of took what the Amazing Spider-Man storyline and merged it in. You know, I didn't have a problem with it. I understand why they would do that, try to get them
it
mix the audience.
The like,
it worked, and it was fine.
Yep.
But I agree. And every one of them had that moment, had a cringeworthy moment. Like, as much as I love them, every one of those movies had a cringeworthy moment.
And the third one is just 2.5 hours
of cringing.
Like, honestly, I like Sam Raimi. He's directed... Spider-Man 2 ranks as one of the best comic book movies I've seen.
I agree. It was better than the first.
I enjoyed the first one. But he should have been fired after what he did with Spider-Man 3. Like, there's no way...
They both should have been.
He should have been.
I don't know why you think that, hey, I'm going to take a character like Venom and completely dismiss it as
and
a secondary character.
It could have been a lot of studio interference, but the way they handled Venom, the entire way that movie was set up was
and
just
that was one,
a disaster.
I remember from the very beginning where I hated the casting of Topher Grace's Venom. But throughout the film, I kind of saw what they were doing with it, and I didn't hate it anymore. I enjoyed it. I think Topher Grace, now you will never hear me say this again, Topher Grace was the one shining light in that movie, as far as he acted circles around emo Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I don't want to say I hated it, because hate is when it comes to movies, hate is very visceral, and like I hated, I can't even think of a movie that I hated, But this came very close, Spider-Man 3. And I'm like with you, like when I heard Spider-Man, like, why are they rebooting it? Like, it's way too soon to reboot a franchise as successful as Spider-Man, even if you didn't like the third movie. But with you, the cast is amazing. Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, who everyone thought, oh, she's going to be Mary Jane Watson. Nope, we're going to dye her blonde and be Gwen Stacy. Deal with it, suckers. They're introducing the Lizard, which, you know, as far as Spider-Man villains go, you don't think of the Lizard at the very top of the list.
Yeah.
You would probably put Kingpin, Green Goblin, Kingpin, the Lizard probably doesn't, Electro. I'm just showing what a dork I am right now, naming Spider-Man characters.
And, I mean, Reese Fons as Kirk Connors in the Lizard is going to be something to see.
The animation, like, they nailed, it's not silly, which is something that always bothered me about Sam Raimi films. Is I know he's a great director, and I know he has all these great accolades, and, you know, I'm not a big fan of Evil Dead, but people love it. Sam Raimi has a sense of humor. And unlike other directors, like a Joss Whedon, who subtly slip in a line or something.
Raimi, it's over.
Raimi, it's like, I'm going to make this really outrageous and put Bruce Campbell in it, so suck it, because it's going to be funny. And I felt that way with all three Spider-Man movies. As much as I love them, there was a camp atmosphere to it that I didn't appreciate. Should be in a movie. Even if Spider-Man is supposed to be fun-loving, just because you put camp in it doesn't mean that it's fun-loving. With this, from what I've seen, we haven't seen the movie yet, because we're not that special. Well, you are more special than I. But, from what I've seen, they've nailed it as far as comedy goes. And I'm not breaking anything that's in the trailers. As far as comedy goes, as far as the more realistic action portrayal goes, I'd be interested to see if they kind of rope some of them. Because it looks like they're going with that aesthetic, the Todd McFarlane aesthetic.
Yeah.
When he had Spider-Man in the late 90s?
Early 90s? Mid, I think,
late 80s, early 90s. I would really love to see if they can get that, if they can nail that aesthetic. Because that could be a very successful, you could redo it entirely. You could have a successful first franchise and then redo it and make it a more successful franchise.
Yeah. And I mean, even the supporting cast with Dennis Leary, Martin Sheen, Sally Field. I'm still questioning Sally Field as Aunt May, but
they're cutting down the demographic.
Right. The whole going back and telling kind of the unknown part of the Spider-Man origin with how Peter Parker's parents are going to fit into this storyline. And it sounds like they're going to make a direct link to something that his parents have to do that leads to this accident that creates Spider-Man.
My only fear with knowing that part of seeing what they could be doing is that it's going to lead into, I'm not sure how familiar with the Spider-Man comic books and whatnot.
Pretty familiar.
Pretty familiar. I don't want it to lead into the Spider-Man clone situation.
No, I think.
And I hope they're just smart enough to do the genetic rape, like to do the core of like the Red Scare Spider, like the 1950s and 60s foam with atomic energy Spider-Man, which created all these great villains.
Yeah.
I hope they just keep it to that, because I think it can be an incredibly successful franchise. And with an actor as young as James Garfield, you could have him. James was the president. James Garfield was not Spider-Man. I was almost good through an entire podcast with Andrew Garfield, an actor who, you know, he's not exactly Peter Parker's age, but who's young enough. Like, what, McGuire was like 30 when he took the role?
Probably mid-20s.
Mid-20s.
10 years ago.
But Andrew Garfield, Andrew? Did I get it right?
Andrew, yes.
Andrew Garfield looks young. He looks young. He looks like he's 18.
Yeah, he looks
and you can have him go through these progressions as Spider-Man would age.
Right. And from what I don't know if you saw him, I don't know if it was Comic-Con or wherever he was, where he got up and read something. He came in disguised as Spider-Man in like a homemade costume.
Oh, really?
And, I mean, it's obvious how much he loved the chance to play this character. And I think when an actor feels that way, it can bring a lot to the role.
I think, especially when you have an actor who already proved himself in Social Network.
Yeah.
Before that, I mean, virtually unknown. Social Network puts him on that A-level status. It's very similar to Hugh Jackman being Wolverine, and how much respect Hugh Jackman has for Wolverine now that he's willing to do anything with a Wolverine tag on it, even if it's Wolverine Origins. Whereas Tobey Maguire was already a full fledged star, by the time he did Spider-Man. But having that ability to have an actor who's young enough to appreciate it and appreciate having fun with it, and can honestly say that because of this movie, he's going to be offered more action films.
Yep.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
However that turns out to be.
And they're already, I read today, they're already working on the script for the sequel.
Oh, they have to.
So they must feel pretty good about it. Because I've been wondering, I mean, it's obviously, I don't think it's going to come out and do, it's definitely not going to do Avengers numbers, but I don't
really
think
really don't think so?
I don't.
I think they're all leading up that way.
Really?
I mean, we had Hunger Games. We had our own little personal bet between you, myself, and Ryan Ben-Harris. What would Hunger Games top? And I think you won that one.
Partially.
I don't think any of us thought Hunger Games would do $400 million.
No.
In 6 weeks. Avengers has done $400 million in a month. You know, and with the talk of Spider-Man over the last year, longer.
Yeah.
And all the, should they do it? Should they not do it? Here's 6 minutes. It's awesome. You know, they're marketing for it. I'd be interested to see how much the public knows about it. Like, what's the name recognition?
Right.
Because I remember when the first movie came out, it was like a 10 to 15%. I only know that because I read an article interviewing the guys who did The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
And The Matrix said Spider-Man had a 7 to 10% people retention rate among viewers. The Matrix had like 20, like 15 to 20.
Okay.
Or I might have the reverse. Maybe it was Matrix at 7 to 10, Spider-Man at 20. But I would like to know how many people like remember or like are going to see this movie. I don't know if it's gonna be. You're right. I'm not sure it's gonna be as big as the Avengers. But I think the.
If it's good, I hope it's huge because I want. If they are, assuming they are or better than Prometheus and Avengers, then I would say 5 movies that good in one summer is better than 10. Pretty decent movies in one summer.
Yeah. Dark Knight Rises, July 20th. I think we have both had this circled on our calendars.
Yeah, and have since the day we announced. Yeah. I'm loving the trailers they're coming out with.
The marketing for it has been brilliant.
Yeah, because I still don't know how it's all going to come together.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I've read that it takes place 7 years after
the there's Dark so much, Knight. And there's so much ambiguousness about just the movie itself.
Yeah. Where how is this story going to come together?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's obvious that we're going to see a Batman movie unlike any Batman movie we've seen, because it's possibly going to not include Batman for quite some time.
Yeah.
And where how is it going to end? Like, I still can't imagine that as much freedom as Warner Brothers has given Christopher Nolan, I can't imagine that they'd allow him to kill off Bruce Wayne at the end of the movie. But at the same time, I'm not sure I would.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I think he comes from the same school of writing the directing that Joss Whedon comes from, which is there's no such thing as a happy ending.
Right.
And that, I mean, the Avengers, it's true. And Buffy, it's true. And Angel, it's true. And everything Joss Whedon has done, there's no such thing as a happy ending.
Yeah.
If your hero is going to be alive, or if your tone is going to be alive, something terrible is going to happen.
And they say it right in the trailer when
Catwoman
says to him, "You've given them everything," and he says, "Not yet."
Yeah,
or not everything, not yet.
You know, I think so. I love me some Anne Hathaway. I make no qualms about that. I don't think a lot of people would disagree with me either. That being said, I was skeptical at first about her being cast as Catwoman. I was more excited about her being cast as Ra's al Ghul's Talia al Ghul.
Okay.
But the trailers have turned me around.
Yeah.
To believing this.
The same way. I wasn't this sure is about not, it, but.
This could be solid. And I'm really curious about how they're going to put it together. Because Nolan has been very deliberate in making his Batman not Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
Not in the world where there are, where Arkham Asylum is as crazy as Arkham Asylum is. A lot of Nolan's Batman has been based, for the most part, in reality.
Yeah.
You know, with the Joker was different because the Joker was a whole persona within it. It was a whole film within itself.
Yeah.
But still, it's based in reality. Like, it's not all crazy with Schumacher or Burton's right. Batman.
So. And I think each villain in the Nolanverse has brought a different theme into it. With the first one, with Batman Begins, it was fear.
Yeah.
With Dark Knight, it was chaos. And it seems like this one's just going to be destruction.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's really interesting the fact that in this one, though, he's not shying away from Batman villains and masks.
Right.
Which it seems like he's been trying to do to make Batman more of a human and less of a hero.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have Bane with his muffled voice.
Which they've improved.
They've improved. They have improved from the first one.
It's obvious. So you can hear it. If they start coming out and saying that they didn't do anything, that's total bullshit because it's very obviously.
My ears have not gotten that good.
Fixed the voice because I was the first time that new trailer came out, I'm like, I can understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a very heavy focus on that second trailer for Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So yeah. How is he going to factor into all this? Is it
a huge mystery within itself?
Yeah.
I mean, they've been speculating about what his character is going to be. I think no matter what happens, this franchise is not dead. Nolan has said, I will not direct, I will not write, but I will produce.
Yeah. Honestly, I want this version of the franchise to die if this is it for Nolan and Bale. Just reboot it, because I don't want to see anybody try and chase this. I don't want to see them take what he's done and try and do part four.
Well, could it be kind of an opposite Prometheus, where Prometheus was a reboot and an origin story? Could this movie kind of be a bridge to a reboot with an ending story?
Possibly.
Could you see the same type of setup in two different movies do it successfully?
Possibly. And if they do something with Joseph Gordon-Levitt taking on the mantle of the Bat.
Which, let me tell you how happy I am you said that.
That is something
that proves, my friend, that you are a fan.
Possibly be...
that you've read all of Nightfalls and Night Rises.
Oh, I have read all of Nightfall, Night Rises, Night's End. I would be interested in seeing that. But now with DC or Warner Brothers... It looks like they're getting the Justice League on the fast track.
Which I don't know how they're going to do.
You're right. I don't... Because you've already got existing franchises or storylines.
It took them so long to pull off the Avengers, and it was so well calculated.
Yep.
Of what films you're going to put in what area, and making sure you're marketable with a secondary star like Iron Man. Let's face it. We all love the Iron Man movies, but the Iron Man character isn't a main Marvel.
No, he's a second tier.
He's a second tier star.
Yeah.
All the stars.
All of the Avengers.
With the exception of Captain America, are second tier stars.
Right.
Which makes it so intriguing that you're able to make it successful, and what other second tier stars could they act with to make it exciting?
Right.
With the Justice League, you're going to have your second Superman movie that has no relation to the first Superman movie.
Or it could be a totally different actor. I mean, Justice League was ready to shoot a few years ago. They were going to get the jump start on Avengers. And it fell apart.
They did?
Yeah, you had Armie Hammer was Batman. I can't remember. Henry Cavill was, or Cavill or whatever, was Cavizel? Up for Superman. But Cavizel. But I don't know that he was actually cast. I forget who was cast as Superman. Adam Brody was cast as Flash. Common
That's
was cast
only
as Green
one.
Lantern.
That's the only one I like is Adam Brody.
I hope they bring him back.
As Flash.
Since there hasn't
that
been
is the
Flash
only character I would ever want to see Adam Brody play.
And this was before Social Network. Armie Hammer was an unknown...
Common. They were going to go with the Black
Green
Lantern.
They were
going to
go with... Yeah, John...
I forget his last name. The one who should have been gay instead of Alan.
Yeah. It's not John Carter, is it?
No, it's not.
Why am I blanking on this?
See how it feels? It's not that nice, is it?
No, I'm just blanking on the name. I'm not applying the wrong name to it. it's going to come to me later, but...
But that's interesting casting within itself.
Yeah, and the guy, what's his, George... George Martin's the guy that writes Game of Thrones. Who's the guy that directed Mad Max? He was directing it.
Really?
Yep. And it fell apart. And so now they're picking up the pieces years later, and who knows what we're going to see. But
I'm not sure, like, the reason why the Avengers work is he had all those films and Hulk.
Building to it.
Building to it.
Right.
Like, you're just going to throw together...
Throw together a Justice League movie and be like, oh, 2 years Justice after League. A Superman movie, here's a Justice League movie with possibly a different star as Superman.
With no one who you recognize.
Right.
In any of these roles. So Superman as Green Lantern, as Batman.
And honestly, Joseph Gordon-Levitt could be looking at a year that sends him to the next level of star. If he'd actually stayed on Django Unchained, he would have had The Dark Knight Rises, Lincoln, Looper, and Django Unchained in that Premium Rush movie all within 1 year. Premium Rush isn't on the same level as those other four movies, but you're talking about quite possibly the biggest movie of the summer, maybe not after Avengers, because without 3D, I'm not sure The Dark Knight Rises can do Avengers business.
You know my feelings on 3D.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think with everything building up to it, I've never, with the exception, no, my brother doesn't like Christopher Nolan movies. He didn't like Memento, and he didn't like...
That's interesting.
It is. We've had discussions about this over family dinner. It's gotten very heated.
Arguments?
Well, we don't have to argue that much. But he did like the Batman movies.
Okay.
So I've never met anyone who hasn't liked Batman or The Dark Knight. That being said, I think it's strong enough to be the biggest movie of the summer. Because if someone's anticipation for it, I've never felt a movie, maybe just because I'm really anticipating it, I've never seen a movie with this much anticipation by so many people who you wouldn't think.
Right.
Like, no one's really introduced Batman to everyone. Whereas Tim Burton was very clicky.
Yep.
You're going to like this because you like Tim Burton. Angela had never read Batman, wasn't a huge Batman fan. I rented Batman Begins, or I had it on DVD, and she fell in love with Batman.
Yeah.
And this whole Christopher Nolan, Christian Bale, I think it's one of the most successful teams. And doing it, like, if you look exactly at Spider-Man, like, the fact, the will of God, they pulled that off, great. But it wasn't perfect. But it's hard for me to say how Batman hasn't been perfect from introducing a third-tier villain who is only known to Batman fans in the first movie.
Yeah, and then going on.
And then going on to the big guns.
Yeah.
And Two-Face and Joker. And then ending it with Bane, who, if you know what happens with Bane, you know,
and
why is Bane in this movie?
Catwoman as what appears to be an ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually two villains in the first movie that are second or third tier villains when it comes to Batman.
Yeah, I forgot about the Scarecrow.
Oh, I thought you were meaning the Scarecrow and not...
No, I was talking about Ra's al Ghul. But yeah, I completely forgot about the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
But even he is second or third tier.
Yep.
I think his potential will be the biggest movie of the summer. I think it can beat the Avengers. Because I think
it's going to have some serious staying power.
It does. But I think when you look what they're up against...
Yeah.
It's going to have the serious staying power. And I think if you compare it to... No one thought The Hunger Games was going to be as big as it was.
Right.
And I don't think The Hunger Games had nearly as much buzz as Batman did. And I think The Avengers doesn't have nearly as much buzz as Batman does. That's what I feel.
All right.
So we both want to see Batman.
Yes.
Badly. We're going to just finish August. August is pretty thin. Bourne Legacy. I want to see it.
I don't. I have no desire to see a Bourne movie without Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass behind the camera. I liked The Bourne Identity. I thought it was a flawed action movie, but I liked what Doug Liman did with it. It brought Matt Damon... I mean, it saved Matt Damon's career. He's said in interviews he couldn't get a script at that point.
Yeah.
And he took The Bourne Identity and went with it, and it made him the star he is now. I liked it. I thought it was very entertaining. When I saw The Bourne Supremacy, I was like, wow, they actually made a sequel that of an action movie that's better than the original.
I need to see Supremacy again.
And then when I saw Ultimatum, I was like, I cannot believe they pulled off a third movie that's better than either of the first two.
I love The Identity. I like Doug Liman. I mean, I'm probably the one person that likes Jumpers. I enjoy Doug. I think Doug Liman has a great aesthetic. Yeah, you don't trust me. Let's keep it the fact that I'm the one person who doesn't like Jumpers. You probably have a lesser of an opinion of me after seeing Jumpers. Because, you know, it's Sam Jackson yelling and screaming with shtick.
Anakin Skywalker.
It's going to be a good movie.
Hey, it works in Avengers.
I liked, I thought the first one, what I liked about it was, it would almost feel like an indie film, like an indie action thriller.
Yeah.
I can't for the life of me remember Supremacy. I've seen it at least twice. So I need to see it again. I don't remember it. I really don't.
And I think Ultimatum's, that's my
Ultimatum
favorite.
Was really good. And what I liked about the Bourne Legacy is that it overlaps Ultimatum.
Yeah, which I didn't know about that till the latest trailer, and I do think that looks cool, just not cool enough to get me.
Like, even with Ed Norton.
Even with, well.
We see the Ed Norton factor again. Like, when it comes to summer movies, I can be tipped by just an actor.
And so can I, but Ed Norton's not enough with.
Really?
Yeah, because it's not, to me, it looks like an Ed Norton paycheck movie. It looks like.
Yeah.
You know,
even Ed Norton,
the Italian Job, when he's stuck in a contract and he has to make it. Like, it's not like a.
Ed Norton has his flaws.
Right. Well.
Stone.
I'm not saying. Yeah. I mean, I want to see Norton's cut of Hulk. Supposedly he and the director, supposedly the cut that is released of Hulk is the studio cut. And Louis Leterrier and Edward Norton have their own cut of the Hulk. Which I would love to see.
There are a lot of things that are existing in people's basements that I would love to hear. Like, there is a rumor that after John Mayer, Kanye West, and I think Common saw Braid together, they immediately went back to Kanye's place and cut a seven-track CD.
Hmm.
That was supposed to be... You were supposed to hear it in the next Kanye album, and it never came out. So there was a track somewhere of those three making music together that I would love to hear. And I hate John Mayer. I'm actually looking forward to The Bourne Legacy. I think we talked about this before about how everyone wants Jeremy Renner to be the next big action star. He's basically taking over the franchise of Mission Impossible. Like, they basically said it's going to be his franchise. I mean...
Yeah.
They didn't say it, but
I think that was the intention when he was cast, and then when it became Tom Cruise's highest grossing movie of all time,
yeah.
I think now we're going to see Cruise and Renner as the leaders of the team.
But even with the Avengers, he makes Hawkeye a believable, enjoyable superhero character.
The whole Hawkeye storyline, I had no idea that was going to happen in Avengers. So when it started that way, I was like, what is going on?
Right.
So then that was a good thing. And I like Renner. I've liked him since I thought he was one of the... I think we've talked about how I think the Hurt Locker is somewhat overrated. And I think... But I thought he was one of the best parts of it.
He was the Hurt Locker.
Yeah. And I mean, he's fantastic in The Town. And
he's really good at The Town.
I think he's better in The Town than he is in The Hurt Locker. He's more believable in that as that character. I think.
I don't know. See, the problem we've talked about. I don't want to go into The Town. The Town was a really good movie. If I see a movie twice in the theaters, you know I really, really enjoy it.
Have you seen the director's cut?
No, I haven't.
With the alternate ending?
There's an alternate ending to The Town. I'm gonna have to buy that
totally
now.
Totally different ending.
Really?
Totally different ending.
Okay.
Much closer to the book, if you read the book.
But I like Jeremy Renner, and I like Ed Norton.
I like the whole cast. I'm still not going to go see it.
Even if it's... Is it no Gringasson?
No. It's like Die Hard 4. If it's PG-13, it's not Die Hard for me. And if
that was a really sucky Die Hard.
If it's not Matt Damon as Jason Bourne, it's not a Bourne movie for me. So I'm going to wait till it comes out on DVD.
So because
get it from Netflix.
Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass worked together on Green Zone. Was Green Zone a legacy?
No, that doesn't count as a Bourne movie. That wasn't as good. But I take issue with the fact that they were on board to do another Bourne. I think Ultimatum worked as... I didn't want to see another Bourne movie with the way Ultimatum ended. I thought it was a great ending to the trilogy. I didn't want to see them come back.
Yeah.
When they started talking with... who's Tony Gilroy? Who's the writer and director of
Gilroy, yeah.
And it fell apart because it sounds like he made a power play to direct it, and that's what got Greengrass out of the picture, and Damon bailed because Greengrass wasn't directing. I just didn't like that, because Gilroy, I think, wrote at least Ultimatum, if not all of the Bourne movies. I want to say he came in on Supremacy, and so
there's definitely a connection with him and Damon and even Soderbergh, because that's the whole gag behind Ocean's 13.
Right.
Is the Gilroy.
So, and for Damon as an actor who's made a few movies with him as a writer, I think it says something that he didn't want to stay on if Gilroy was going to write and direct.
Yeah.
So, and for me, I guess out of all of them, I trust Damon the most at this point. So if he didn't want to do it, I don't want to see it.
I
don't want to pay $10 to see it.
I totally understand that logic.
I will check it out on Netflix and probably have the entire plot ruined for me by then.
I totally understand that logic because I'm not sure what else Paul Greengrass has done besides the Bourne movies. And
United '93. What was the?
That was the one I wanted to see. That was the super indie one, right? Where he kept the. He kept the terrorists and the passengers separate until the last second.
Yeah, and that was the good 9/11 movie.
That was the good 9/11.
We've already talked about World Trade Center.
Which I really wanted to like so badly.
United 93, I thought, was really well done. And I know people have issues with the Bourne movies and the second and third Bourne movies with the shaky cam and the handheld cam. And that's what United 93 is. But for...
You know what? As long as it's not the Steadicam upside down, like an Armageddon, I'm fine with it. People have the same problems with Hunger Games. Like, fuck you, it's running through the woods.
Yeah.
Like, as long as they're not putting the Steadicam upside down, defeating the whole purpose of the Steadicam.
Yeah.
Michael Bay, I'm looking at you. If you're listening to this, which you're not, that's when I have a problem with shaky cams. So the next movie after that, the same weekend, you want to see, and I have no desire
to see. I'll be a Total Recall while you're at the Bourne Legacy.
I don't want to see Andrew's looking at me this crazy eye like, I don't want to see Total Recall. No.
I
want to see Total Recall.
I don't know. Like, do we really need another Total Recall? Like, do we really need...
Yeah. Honestly...
I would argue that we really need another RoboCop.
Do we really need the first Total Recall? See, for me, it's... I'm a big fan, and I'm a big fan of Philip K. Dick's ideas because I've never actually read a Philip K. Dick book. I have a pile of them at my house that I want to read, but I love the movies that are based on his work. Blade Runner, now I'm blanking on them.
Are you playing with the cat?
Blade Runner, I mean, even stuff like Paycheck, like the idea behind it I like a lot. Maybe not the entire execution of the movie, but the idea behind it, I really like. So I want to see a version that's closer to what he envisioned in his book and not Arnold Schwarzenegger running around with one-liners.
Say it in an accent. Yeah. Say it in an accent.
Considered a divorce. So I don't...
Cool.
I don't... Like, I...
I love you, honey. I'm just a walking stiff here.
I saw Total Recall years and years ago. I may go back and rewatch the original, but... It's not my favorite Arnold movie. And if this is closer to what Dick's book was, not based on, but what Dick wrote in the book, I think, what is it? We Can Make It For You Wholesale is the name of the story it's based on.
I didn't know it was based on a story.
Yeah.
I thought it was based on a terrible Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. No.
It's not. It's based on...
I thought it was based on a three-boob movie with Sharon.
Yes, the three-breasted alien.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not even that I don't like anyone in it. Like, I like Colin Farrell, and I like...
Well, you don't like Jessica Biel.
I don't like Jessica Biel. I like Bryan Cranston.
Whereas...
We all know how much we love
Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston's
the villain, so...
And I love Kate Beckinsale. I love Kate Beckinsale in fighting and anything that she does. I did not...
Minority Report was Philip K. Dick. That's the other one I was thinking of.
So my love for Kate Beckinsale didn't drive me to see... the last Underworld movie. But it did force me to watch the first two, and the third one, which she wasn't even in.
Right.
My love for Kate Beckinsale fighting is high. It's up there. And especially if she can beat the crap out of Jessica Biel, because I hate Jessica Biel. with an unholy passion.
I'm a big fan of Jessica Biel, just not necessarily her acting.
As an acting ability.
Same thing with Kate Beckinsale. So
I would say Kate Beckinsale could win.
I think Kate Beckinsale is probably better. I don't know, because I think Biel's got a lot of potential. I just don't know that she's given the right roles.
Wasn't she? She was in something that I didn't hate her in recently.
The A-Team? Because I expected...
I didn't hate her in the A-Team.
I did not know how... I thought that was going to ruin the A-Team, and I actually liked the way they worked her character.
I did not hate the A-Team.
And I felt she was actually, for what, as believable as that entire movie is, yes. I felt she
in
was
in the realm of realistic. Right.
When you take the believability factor of that movie and factor her in, I thought she was believable. But for...
I didn't hate her in the A-Team.
Going back to Philip K. Dick, for movies that are based on his books or novellas or short stories, whatever. We've got The Adjustment Bureau, which I loved. The ending was weak, but
I really like The Adjustment Bureau a lot.
I think the first three quarters of that movie is one of the best movies I'd seen in a while at the time of release last year. It just kind of fell apart.
We watched it in the what? Winter on HBO? And we enjoyed it.
Scanner Darkly, which I still haven't seen, but I've heard it is an interesting movie. Paycheck, which I like the idea behind, but maybe John Woo, Ben Affleck weren't the best team to bring it to the screen.
I'd be willing to bet on that.
Minority Report, which I'm a huge, huge fan of, and I think it's one of Spielberg's most underrated movies. Total Recall, which is the reason we're talking about it, and Blade Runner. So you've got Blade Runner, Minority Report, which I think are two classics, and other movies that are very strong. Oh, except for Next, which is also Jessica Biel.
Nicholas Cage. Next was a stinker.
I haven't seen it yet.
Next was bad. Remember Next, honey? That was the sidekick movie?
Nicholas Cage and
that was bad. That was
I haven't seen it.
That was almost as bad as the, it was not a sci-fi film, but the one with Matthew Fox and the president of
Vantage Point.
That is a stinker.
I haven't seen that one.
They're both up there as stinkers.
So, yeah, I want to see Total Recall. I think Colin Farrell has... It's been an interesting evolution of his career the last few years. And this seems like a movie he should have done 10 years ago.
After
eight
SWAT.
8 years ago. Yeah, like around SWAT, The Recruit, that time period.
The Recruit was a bad one, too.
And then he's come out and done...
In Bruges
and some other really character-based smaller movies. And now he's going back to something like this. So I want to see...
He was in, it's Cowboy Singer movie, too.
The what?
Lone Heart. Or Dark Heart or something Heart.
Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart.
Jeff Bridges, yeah.
He was good in that.
Yep.
I loved him in Bruges.
Yeah, Bruges is amazing.
I don't know why he didn't win an Oscar for Bruges.
So I want to see what he's going to do in this type of movie. And Bryan Cranston as the villain, along with Jessica Biel and Kate Beckinsale, is worth my $10.
I think the last movie in August that I want to see is not Expendables 2, but the Lesser Helmsworth, as we call him at this household.
The Lesser Helmsworth. Awesome.
I still think the funniest thing about that is that they went to the Lesser Helmsworth with Thor originally, and he wasn't big enough. Was that what it was?
I think he met with the director, and they both said he wasn't right for it.
He wasn't right
for it. He should be my brother. That's what
and that's how we all know the name Helmsworth.
Awesome.
I want to see the campaign.
I do too.
With
Galifianakis
and Farrell as two Republican
politicians
in South Carolina.
That looks pretty good.
That looks good. And it's Jay Roach. It's the team that everyone loves.
Yep.
I think it's good. Jason Sudeikis is now good in this post SNL days.
I didn't even know Sudeikis was in it. That's awesome.
I think it's gonna be a killer. I think Will Ferrell. He tried to do his experimental thing with the Spanish talking movie.
Yeah.
And something else recently, which didn't work out quite so well. But between, he's got the campaign, which in a campaign year is a brilliant idea to do. And
yes, it is.
He's got allegedly Step Brothers 2 at some point.
Anchorman 2.
But that's, they said Step Brothers 2, and then 2 weeks later, Anchorman 2 is a go.
Yeah.
I want to know which one's first, because I kind of want Step Brothers 2 to be first.
I think since we've already seen trailers, Anchorman 2 is going to be first.
No, it hurts. But I think Step Brothers 2 would be the better
one.
And movie.
I did just read they signed Christina Applegate back, so I'm excited that they have
the entire
cast.
So that's our summer preview. And I think we're going to try to get together, at least for Spider-Man and,
yeah,
and
we'll
the Batman.
We'll catch up on the others.
And we'll try to...
But not Battleship.
Not Battleship, no. Maybe even John Carter. Maybe if you're lucky, folks, you'll get a John Carter review.
And Snow White and the Huntsman.
I think sometime if we could pull it off, so we could watch a movie and do a commentary as we're watching it, would be an amazing trip. And you wouldn't even need beer. That'd be just a great show to listen to and to do. Maybe not to listen to. You at home might hate it, but we would love it. So for the Pizcast, after our 2-month hiatus, welcome back. We hope to see you next month. I'm Nick.
I'm DJ.
Have a great one.